All right, go ahead. Hit us with the Jack Nicholson impression.
There's just so many.
Just do the stair scene. You quote that one all the time. That was the one you like acted out and quoted when the first time that we watched that. So
okay,
how do you like it? How do you like it? What are you doing down here? Okay, let's talk. What do you want to talk about? And then wait, sorry.
Yeah, no, he's losing it.
No, no. I'm playing Shelley Duvall's part.
Yeah, he's playing.
It's all in my mind.
If I knew it, I'd do it.
Maybe you wanted to talk about Danny? I think we should talk about Danny. I think we should discuss what should be done with him and what should be done with him. I don't think that's true. I think you have some very definite ideas about what should be done with Danny, and I'd like to know what they are.
The unfortunate thing about the podcast is that it's not going to catch the crooked smile
I
and
know,
all the head movements.
That is the unfortunate thing. Like, if he watched it, it'd be like key.
Mm. It's pretty good. So that's,
and then,
I mean,
yeah. And
I had a feeling that we were going to get a Nicholson movie when I told Kramer to ask you what kind of movie you wanted to do.
Like, it was on my film review, and that's literally why I saw it. And I'm like, oh, okay, that'd be a good one I could write a review on. And I'm just like, it was the 70s, and that was the next one that I had to do. So that's why I chose it. It was either that or I could pull out a list. 70s
so,
movies were not that great, though.
I agree, actually. Those are like, yeah. I feel like they just skipped a whole,
yeah,
like,
generation.
Yeah.
Picked it back up.
Yeah,
in the
80s, I'm trying to think if, like, there's any 70s.
Well, there's probably quite a few that were not. Like, Silverado. Oh, that was 80s. Nope. But there's probably quite a few that were just not.
Because I think that a lot of times, like, I'll be like, oh, that was 70s.
Rocky was
a
good,
like,
one.
Oh, that was
okay.
Although, that one I wanted you to see. You've never seen Rocky. Have you seen
Rocky? I've seen Rocky.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Only the first one.
That's fine. That's the one that won the the Academy Award, I believe. Or did
don't
it?
Don't look at me. I don't know. That.
I don't
can't
know.
Remember. It
You're
won,
talking to the
it
wrong.
It won like six.
It.
It won six, I'm pretty sure. Star Wars. But that's new.
Oh, that's true.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Let's see. So,
wow, Nate just put that anywhere.
Sounds like I just dropped a whole filing cabinet.
Probably.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh,
that was
actually,
70s?
That's
I thought that was 80s.
That's a funny movie.
I just watched that a couple weeks ago.
Alien came out 79.
Oh, yeah.
Jaws. I mean, other than what, 5 movies that we've listed, that's it.
And even then, you're just taking a small.
Yeah, these
oh, yeah,
are
I mean,
just.
Like, yeah, there's so many other movies
right
that
here.
We list.
What was I gonna say? Oh, I was like, I like doing good movies. Like, Joker was good. I mean, this movie
was a really
I've never
good.
Seen. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. How do you say cuckoo?
Cuckoo, yeah,
cuckoo.
Yeah. One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest.
I've never seen that before, and I really
enjoyed
watching it a lot.
Yeah.
But like, as far as podcasting about a movie, it's nothing beats like doing a terrible movie and just ripping.
Yeah, ripping
it.
Into it because it's a lot more fun. You can critique.
It really is.
Snot out of it.
Yeah, which is difficult to do with a movie like this.
Yeah, so maybe I should have picked a terrible film.
Well, if you want to come back on, because Aaron is the person who is supposed to be our other co-host, and he's MIA right now, so.
But not KIA, so.
Yeah, MIA, what?
Because
oh, yeah, that's
up
really
everything.
Bad. No, sorry. Knuckle-cracking
yeah,
the mic.
Well, see, we could cut all this out. See, I'm doing it before
yeah,
we
but
even
okay,
start.
Okay, but I'm saying, like, don't do it, because if you're doing it while other people are talking, he won't be able to take that
yeah,
out
hear
and not
it.
The talking, so you can't do little things that make noises.
Speaking of you talking, is it on purpose or on accident that you just kind of act like Jack Nicholson? Because I know you like him
I think it's accidental. I've had a lot of people
you know
actually come up to me. I've had people come up to me and say, I don't know what it is, but you're like a Jack Nicholson, Ryan Reynolds mix. Like, if they had
literally
a child.
That's his personality.
If like, they had a child, weird. That's you.
Dude, if they made a movie together, you would just die. You
I
wouldn't
know.
Even get all the way through.
I would
just die.
I'd love it. I'd die of excitement and a heart attack. And
so, I don't know how much intro there has been up until this point in the final cut, but if it hasn't been obvious, we're talking about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I am Nate Clark.
I'm Karina Clark.
I'm Bradley Thomas.
And I am Karina Clark, needs to scoot closer to the mic, and this podcast is limited to everything.
himself water.
Microphone.
It's so nice actually having freedom of speech, you know. I could say whatever I want.
Yeah.
Well, like, why don't you say whatever you want right into, right into it. How about you do our, usually Karina, usually I try to do a synopsis and it goes poorly, so Karina takes over. I'm going to have you do
not
a quick
as poorly
synopsis.
As Aaron
quick synopsis of the film.
Yeah, since you picked this, you've seen it.
Well, if you like statutory rape, you know, this is the film for you.
Not statutory.
Also,
everyone was over 18.
Well, the hypothetical.
So, generally for synopsis, we want to keep it to like 3-4 sentences. So, like, just the basic, because I mean, we're going to talk about it, but like.
Just a plot summary.
Just a, yeah, very, not too much detail.
Well, definitely let's see. Jack Nicholson does a magnificent performance.
See,
pretending
no, it's opinionated. It's opinionated.
Like,
he doesn't do a magnificent.
No, more opinionated.
Now
no,
I got
less,
both.
Less.
No, just facts, not opinions.
Okay, let's see. Jack Nicholson portrays a man that pretends to be crazy to get off of a work farm, gets put in an insane asylum, and tries to get therapy. But runs into some problems with the nurse Ratchet, who foils his plans.
Since you already said this, why don't we just start talking about this right now?
That he's crazy?
Yeah, is he actually crazy, or
well,
is
that's
he
up
not?
To the viewer. Actually, there are some instances where he does portray very aggressive tendencies that would be seen in an insane man, and then other times you could definitely tell, like, hey, I'm just faking it.
He's definitely, but that's the thing, is him, like, whenever he has those
exactly.
lucid, quote-unquote, moments where he says, I'm just faking it, like, is that just part of his craziness?
Personality, or, and he's in denial.
I kind of felt like he's totally sane the whole time, and that his crazy moments when he does things are probably a combination of, he was, like, trying to get out of being on a work farm or whatever, and was looking for a route out of that situation, but then once he gets to the the psych ward or wherever he is, it seemed like then when he'd have like crazy episodes that was more of just a way of maybe letting emotion out or whatever, because if you are a sane person who doesn't really need therapy and you're cooped up with a bunch of people who, even if you like, even though he seems to like a lot of the guys eventually, like, you're cooped up with a bunch of people that do have mental issues, and that nurse is obviously, like, a horrible person who is manipulating the situation. And
well,
so I could see
you
that...
you get into the case of everybody else actually being crazy, too, with the one of the last therapy scenes, they bring that up, actually, where some people aren't crazy, they're just seeking therapy and want help as well.
Okay, but still, like, there's some people that clearly have, like, some kind of issue, even if it's not as bad as they're making it look, so I could see that... I felt like a lot of it was just him reacting to, if you are one of the few people in there who's truly sane and you're cooped up with that all the time, it could lead you to being really frustrated. And he's obviously frustrated for a lot of the movie.
So it's like you dating me.
Sure.
Well, okay. We really don't need to know
that. I'm sorry. You're cooped up too long.
That was probably the most impactful scene for me, maybe other than Billy's death. But the scene where he realizes that, like, a lot of the people there don't actually have to be there, and that's but they're staying there, and for him that's the opposite of like the position he wants to be in, and he can't imagine these other people that are choosing this life of restriction and everything, whereas all he wants to do is get away from that, like,
especially with a character like Nurse Ratchet, who you can definitely tell she's intentionally trying to make it as uncomfortable for him.
And for everybody, I feel like.
I don't know. Well,
I don't think she's...
I give her a little bit of lenience because of the position that she's in and the people that she has to deal
with.
She's
very rule-oriented.
Yeah.
Yeah, which wouldn't be a bad thing, except for that you can tell that some of it is malevolent.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if she was just...
Just
if
the
she
expressions
was,
used on her face. And
yeah.
I think she won an award for it.
She did.
For Best Actress.
Oh, she
did.
I mean, the actress did a great job. Yeah. I don't remember her name.
But it's
we didn't go over the cast or director or anything, which we normally do.
Let's see here. Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito, who was a pleasant surprise.
See, you didn't know that was Danny DeVito.
I didn't either. I got halfway through the movie.
It's not Danny DeVito.
Yeah, it didn't look like him.
He looks way more Italian than he ever has in his life.
Well, it's kind of hard. You could tell he was always, you know, that strapping young bald man from the get go. The solid, he's shorter than 5'7". Yeah, he's. He's maybe 4'11", he might be about 4'10". 5 feet. He
might be okay. About 5 feet. So director is Milos Forman. It's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest from 1975, starring, of course, Jack Nicholson, Louise Fletcher, Will Sampson, Danny DeVito, Brad Dourif,
Christopher... Not to be confused with the Brad Dourif and the Hobbit.
Christopher Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
William Redfield, Scatman Crothers. I don't know. People that I don't know at that point.
He's the bow-legged black man that we love. Or at least I do.
The bow-legged black man.
It, look at his knees.
It's which one are we... Who are we talking
Scatman
about?
Scatman Crothers.
Scatman. Oh, is that...
He's
the night warden.
He's the guy that parties with him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh!
Yeah.
Now that you say that, I can totally see... I don't know. I've only seen The Shining once.
Well, get on my level.
I'm working on
it. I've only seen it zero times, I'm going to confess.
That's okay.
This is actually... I think... I was trying to think before this movie, as far as Jack Nicholson movies go... I think I've seen Batman, The Departed, and Easy Rider, and I think that's it.
Hmm.
And he has a lot of movies.
He does.
He has a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I think his best years were most likely the 80s and the 90s. That's when you definitely see better performances from him, not as childish.
How do you feel about The Departed? Well, not The Departed, Jack Nicholson in The Departed.
Jack Nicholson? It feels like a kind of a different role. It feels like he actually has to do more acting instead of him having to be himself, because in a lot of his films, he definitely just plays that, you know, kind of narcissistic jerk who only cares about himself.
You're still kind of describing what he's like in The Departed. It's like what you were saying earlier, that he kind of plays the same.
It's difficult. There's some, maybe it's just his performance that's different, that would be different.
He actually seems a little more insane in The Departed.
Yeah. It's really hard because I remember watching special features for The Shining, and like he's getting prepped for the scenes and he does the weirdest things. It's all sporadic and random, and he's like, okay, I gotta get in a mindset of a crazy person, and like he's jumping up and down like doing air squats with an axe to get ready.
Like a very unattractive lumberjack.
Yeah. Yeah, not in his
like
prime
a
then.
5'7" lumberjack.
Whoa, 5'9".
Oh, that's the other thing, like even like his build is very similar to your build. It really is. I was thinking of
yeah, it was just meant to be. I am the love child of Ryan Reynolds and Jack Nicholson. Just imagine that, a declining hairline, but with, you know, Ryan Reynolds' smile.
You do have a nice smile.
Thank you.
No problem. Alrighty, so we were talking about whether or not he's actually crazy, though.
Yeah, I think. And I mean, I think we've touched on it a lot, but I think that he goes in and I almost goes in and out of it. I don't think he's actually crazy. And I really, really, what I wonder is, Milos Forman, or I guess the writer, whoever wrote it, what they intended, if they intended for him to be, it's not based on a book.
Yeah, it is based on a book as well, which I haven't read.
I've never
but,
read the book.
It has piqued my interest, and I would like to read it now because. Yeah. The author's intention might have had him actually be insane without him realizing that he was, because a lot of people who are insane maybe don't realize that they are insane. You know, they think, oh, I'm a perfectly
fine
person.
To the degree that they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It would be interesting, to read the book and see just what other details are included that, I mean, obviously, because they can never get everything into a movie, and how much of it is accurate to the book and how much of it is Jack Nicholson's take on the character in the book. Like, how much creative freedom did they let him have?
Yeah.
Or did they try to stick really closely to the storyline?
Or is that character like that in the book?
Yeah.
And they saw that in Jack Nicholson's other performances and said he's
that.
The one.
And the character's R.P. McMurphy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
Mac, yeah.
R.P. McMurphy. Yeah. He's actually a very, I find him, although kind of crazy, very charismatic in this movie, especially when you see the impact. The first time you really see it is when they are like making up the baseball game, when they can't watch it and they're watching the baseball game, quote unquote watching, and like he really gets all the guys just into it. Like, he's actually extremely charismatic person.
Well, and what I thought was interesting about the movie is, you know, you get them all sitting in that group, I don't call it therapy, but I feel like it's a really warped, messed up version of therapy, of them sitting around talking about their problems to other people that are crazy, and that doesn't seem helpful at all. But the fact that he seems to be a better therapeutic treatment for all of those guys than anything that they're getting from the institution. Like they become,
act more normal when they're around him.
And they stop fighting as much because I feel like, because I think that's one of the things that was really interesting is like Nurse Ratched just lets them fight. She doesn't care. Like she doesn't like it when they start to come together and like to get along with each other. And I don't know how intentional that is, or maybe it's just the way it's acted, but I thought that was really interesting that she gets really mad that like when they get along better, when they hang out and they have more fun after Matt gets there.
Well, that's because it's not according to her rules.
Yeah, yeah, which for whatever her reason are, but you would think that like in a normal situation that even if she doesn't like Mac as a person, that a normal nurse or somebody working with crazy people would be happy to see them not fighting.
A big part of this movie is about her character and Mac butting heads.
Oh, I know, I know, I know.
So her character is blinded by how much she doesn't like him.
And that's fine. I get that, but I'm just saying that it's like you see that she clearly, before he even joined, or maybe he has joined, but he's not really part of it yet. Like, obviously, that is really normal, though, for her to let them, like, fight and argue with each other, and she's not doing anything, and she's not fazed by it. So she clearly, even before Matt gets there, that's kind of her MO already, is that she just doesn't
that's
care.
That's the first meeting where Mac's in there. He doesn't really say anything in the therapy. And
yeah, she doesn't have any, any context for him yet. She doesn't know anything about him yet. He's just sitting there. And you can tell that this is normal, though, for her, that she just lets them fight. And so it is interesting then that, I mean, yeah, of course, it's because their characters are supposed to butt heads pretty hard. But he is clearly a better therapeutic treatment for these guys, some of whom are actually crazy, some of whom are there voluntarily. But yeah, like, it's really interesting how he's a better remedy for them than anything that they're being offered in the institution.
Which is actually interesting because at one point she's talking to the I forget his name, McFarland or the guy with the big beard, Macklin, I can't remember his name.
I remember who you're talking about, but the guy, I think
he doesn't have a wheelchair, but the guy with the big beard and the glasses. Where she tells him like he wants to keep going back to his bed and like sleeping alone. She's like, no, being with other people is beneficial as opposed to like being by yourself just feeds your depression or whatever. But what really brings that to fruition is Mac's character. He's the one that, like, because otherwise, you're right, they're just arguing and they're fighting the whole time, even though they're together. The real thing that helps them forget about that is actually Mac. And the weird thing is that she still hates him, even though he's the one that's actually making that work.
Yeah, because it's just his background, too. I mean, he's, you know, a convicted felon, you know. Accused of statutory, well, he actually admitted to the crime of statutory rape, and he's been in several fights, you know, in the prison or on the work camp, and, you know, being a woman who's, you know, just strict to the book and plays by all the rules, you know, she probably doesn't like a character like that, and she probably knows what he's doing, and he's trying to get out of working, so she probably just has that ingrained resentment towards the fact that he's a rule breaker and that he causes a lot of chaos to her.
And she sees this as her turf. Exactly. This is her turf that he's coming onto. Yeah.
Although she doesn't have, you can tell that she doesn't care about any of her patients, though.
No, there is no,
like, she doesn't care at all. And she also doesn't care if they get better, is kind of the vibe that I get. Like, that she's not interested in whether or not they make any progress or they recover. Like, it seems to be more about, do they allow her to maintain this feeling of control and that she gets to run this however she wants to? Because
maybe that's what, I didn't see her from such a cynical point of view as you do. I saw her from, she's a lady who's kind of like what I said earlier, I give her a lot of lenience because of the situation and she's in and the people she has to deal with.
See, I think I would give her more, perhaps, but when you find out that a lot of these people are there voluntarily and she still treats them like that, like, these aren't people that are, like, they aren't all people who are actually crazy.
Here's the thing.
The fact that, like, she is still such a control freak who doesn't want people to have fun, she doesn't want people to get better, to make a recovery, to make progress. And she does that to people who are voluntarily there, like, but not see, people that the state has said you have to be
there. I think
here.
A lot of the times that we see her like that, the problem is we don't see her before Mac gets there. And so I think a lot of the problem, a lot of the ways that we see her act like what you're talking about is because of Mac, like the cigarettes thing where, or where the guy wants his pack of cigarettes and he's freaking out about it. And she just keeps telling him to sit down and like, she won't give him his cigarettes. Like he's a baby with candy, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The reason she won't do that is because of Mac, because he gambled away all their cigarettes and whatnot. And so it's all, I mean, it seems like the events where she's treating them like children or treating them in that way, it comes back to Mac and her hatred for him.
I don't know. She was, but at the end when she's talking to Billy about him sleeping with that girl, that's a pretty, like, she's pretty awful and insensitive in that scene. Like, he's a full-grown adult. And well, she's and all like, I don't know how this would
need to be shared. Like, that should stay within the hospital in private unless she got permission to share that information. You know, she's saying, well, your mom and I are old friends.
Yeah.
Like, she's using everything.
Yeah. And yeah. It's just like, you can tell, like, that's part of what makes me think is like, she's just a bad person. Like, it would be one thing if she was just doing things to, like, he wasn't causing a problem. Like, yeah, obviously, like, the girl, Candy, wasn't supposed to be in the hospital, and, like, that's its own issue. But when he comes out of the room, like, he's behaving. Like, he's not causing a problem. He just comes mm-hmm. in, like, is like, oh, sorry. And, like, the guys are chuckling a little bit because they're like, hey, he got laid. Good job. But, like, there's not actual conflict. And she is the one that, like, calls him out and keeps antagonizing him and being like, don't you feel bad? Don't you feel bad? Don't you feel bad? And it's like, why are you trying to shame him into feeling bad about something? Like,
he's
that's
not fully mentally there, so.
Yeah, well, but either way, it's like, why are you trying to shame somebody into feeling a certain way that you think they should feel? And then playing on, like, oh, well, your mom would really hate it if she knew this. And it's like, this is not a five-year-old. Well, like, this is a full.
Dealt with suicidal thoughts before and depression, so yeah, you don't so want to antagonize.
Yeah, and she's egging him on to the
that.
Point where he's, like, on his knees begging her to not tell his mom, and she just acts like, yeah, I'm gonna tell your mom anyway.
I gotta be
like,
honest, so I didn't see it coming that he was gonna kill himself.
Well, I didn't
no,
see
I
that.
I really
didn't see,
that
coming either. However, though, she's clearly being a very terrible person in that scene.
Yeah, I would agree
like,
with that.
Yes. And I think that seems like par for the course
well,
for her, though.
And I would go to the extent that the real doctor there was McMurphy. It was Nicholson's character, because he showed more concern for Billy after he found out what happened. He was getting ready to leave. He had the chief and him getting ready to hop ship, you know, get out of the facility. And then he just hears the loud scream, and it comes from the room Billy was taken into. He could have easily just ran out of there, you know, said, I'm out, I've done what I need to do. But he runs and he sees what happens, and he reacts very violently because he cared so much about this boy.
I think,
and he knows that it's her fault that he killed himself.
I think actually what kind of fuels that is, I think he's guilty. I think he feels guilty because he's the one that forced Billy into the situation
Maybe.
With the girl.
Yeah, I could.
That's
I
the way
could
I see
it going either way.
I think it's kind of a combination of like he feels bad that Billy got in trouble for him bringing the girl in, and for then he fell asleep and like they didn't leave when they were supposed to. But I think it is partly that he watches her bring Billy to the point of, you know, being like an emotional wreck, and then doesn't care. And so I think it's probably a combination of him feeling bad because it's his fault that Billy got in trouble in the first place, and knowing that this woman then took Billy, who was in a good mood when he came out from the room and everything, and was fine and would have been fine probably if she had not said anything. Like, she's clearly the person that pushed it to that point, and so I think it's probably a combination of like he already didn't like her, now she did something that forced him forced this kid to the edge.
She didn't even really say anything. Like, she got down, she saw what happened to Billy, and then she's like, okay, I need to address the other men. It's like, we're just going to go back to our regular schedule, our routine, and we're not going to, you know, do anything about this. And then that's when Nicholson loses it and, you know, tries to kill her and start strangling her.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, it's probably some kind of, like, just a combination of him feeling bad, a buildup of frustration with this lady, the fact that she pushed Billy to the edge, all of that kind of coming together, and then with her treating it like it doesn't really matter, like, okay, well, everybody, let's go back to our normal routines now, even though your friend just killed himself in here.
Well, and Nicholson views them as actual men who aren't crazy, and he mentions that a lot of the times and says that to the guys. He's like, you're not a loon, you guys aren't crazy, you guys are normal guys. And, you know, he acknowledges that when he's on the bus or fishing.
He says, like, half the people out in the city are crazier than you guys are.
Yeah, no, and he treats them with a lot of dignity and respect, even when they're clearly, like, having an episode or not behaving in a normal way. he still treats them with respect and like a full human being who has control of their, you know, their full faculties and everything.
The fishing scene is so happy.
Yeah, I love that.
That's like it's, the one not dark moment.
And it's super cute that he calls all of them doctor. Like,
he doesn't call. And he's like, this is like Mr. Hazlitt or Harrison. I forget the guy's name. The one who they keep making fun of and like saying, oh, he's queer, he's not straight. Like, did you catch any of those jokes? And it's going straight. And he's like, I'm going straight enough.
That one guy. But the rest of them, he calls, I don't know. It's cute though, because like, obviously these are people who, like, obviously these are people that are, you know, locked up in a mental institution, but he's giving them, you know, kind of the fun of being like, no, these are doctors. They work, also, you know, they've got, these are people with a PhD, like.
Very lackadaisical security at this loony bin.
Right?
I think they just don't care. They're just like, not my problem.
Okay.
He's gone.
Can we also, though, I don't know why this made me think of it, but just addressing weird things. The scene when, after the...
Your mic's up here, Karina.
Sorry. I know.
I don't know what you're looking for down there.
I was thinking. The scene... Right before he finds out that Chief is not, or like when he finds out that Chief is faking it, the scene of that, like, after, I don't know if it's before or after the other guy goes into the room to get sedated or whatever, but when he's looking down the hall and he's watching all of the guys like be weird in the hall, and then the doctor comes out and they all like back up out of the way to where the doctor can't see them. Oh, yeah. And like, that was super weird, and it kind of felt, I wasn't sure what to do with that because they never really did anything else with it. And I wasn't sure it was supposed to be like, there's a ton of people here faking it, or it gave it a really weird vibe though, because they all like back up out of the way and act normal for a sec as the doctor walks by. And then when he's gone and goes into that room, they all come back out and start doing, but it's like they snap out of it for a second, back up. I don't know. It was really weird. Yeah, and I didn't know what to do with really that scene. Like, it was really bizarre, and it made it the rest of that feel really off, and I was like, oh, that's kind of creepy, but I don't know what to do with that. Well, I think
there's a fear factor with, you know, behaving a certain way. I think it's a lot of conditioning that's going on within the hospital, because if they're not acting a certain behavior, they get 10,000 volts straight to the brain. So you go that, and it's like, oh, I don't like this person. I'm getting the hell out of here.
Okay, but why would... They only seem to do that to the people who are acting normal, though, sane, that they give them treatment to, like, make them crazier, versus the people that actually have issues. They're not...
Well, to be fair, the only people they did that shock thing to was the people that were fighting, that started the
regardless,
fight.
Regardless. But I don't know. The fact that the whole hospital seems off, though, would not surprise me if they were not... I think you're
getting a little too conspiracy theory.
Maybe. But regardless, like, the people that are... Like, why would there be a consequent? I mean, they're locked up in a loony bin. They're acting like they have mental issues. Why would they stop acting like that when the doctor walked by, when clearly they feel free to, I mean.
Maybe it's like where you're like at work and you're just kind of dinking around, and then your box walks by and you're like, oh, I just got to like straighten this. And
you change your behavior when you're around like people that are, you know, have this essence of authority behind them.
Yeah, even if you're not doing something wrong, if somebody if like in a position of power walks by in your scenario, you feel like you should be actively doing something.
Which would make sense, except for that these are supposed to be crazy people. Who wouldn't, like, this should be, like, the things that they're doing would be, like, involuntary.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Unless they've been trained to fear that person.
Yeah.
Regardless, though, like...
Just think of the last scene after McMurphy gets the lobotomy. He's still fighting. That's just a natural response that's there to fight for life. So maybe
But that's not the same as reacting to a doctor walking
by. It's only a natural response for him, I think, is what we see in this film. And he has to inspire that in other people. And really, the only person he inspires in is Chief.
Yeah.
We see. But I think everyone else really is kind of lacking that to fight back, that fire to fight back.
Except for that one guy. I don't remember his name. The
tall guy with the crazy eyes.
Yeah, I think that's
a part of his disorder. Is just
maybe, being very, but like, he gets really celebratory though when he sees Chief leave, and he gets really into it when Mac is trying to strangle Nurse Ratched, and he gets really into it some other parts.
I think he just likes violence and
maybe rebellion. I don't know. I'm just saying that I think maybe Mac inspired that a little bit in him, but I also think he's genuinely crazy, and so he doesn't like feel like he wants to leave or any of that kind of thing that Mac was trying to inspire in some of the guys that he knew were there voluntarily. I think but I didn't notice that. Like he's you know, he's very excited for Chief leaving and things like that, where he seems to embrace some of what Mac was trying to bring there. He's just not
like, obviously it goes against Nurse Ratched and goes against the institution of the hospital, and he's happy that
I feel like his character kind of comes around towards the end of the movie.
Which one?
The tall crazy guy.
Lloyd's character, Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah
I don't know,
I just thought that, yeah, he kind of seems to exhibit it a little bit, but I also don't think he's all the way there. So it's not the same as, like, one of the guys who's there voluntarily.
So we should probably also talk about Mac's death scene, the fact that Chief kills Mac.
Yeah. I kind of liked it.
Do you like that he killed him, or...
Yeah, because he put him out of his misery.
Yeah. Well, he's already brain dead at that point. He's a vegetable. I mean, they take his, you know, reasoning away, his free thought.
I know, it's a lobotomy. And probably not a very good one based on the fact that this is the 70s and people were still
lobotomies illegal?
Well, it depends on the type of lobotomy. That one was like a surgical lobotomy. They used to do like ice pick lobotomies, which were really, really bad.
But even just lobotomies in general.
I don't know. I mean, one of the Kennedys had one. Was it John Kennedy's sister?
This is news to me, so I have no idea.
I can't remember who it is. One of the Kennedys had one. It was a girl who she was like, there wasn't anything wrong with her. She was just, if I remember correctly, so I may need to like look this up. But what I've been told or what I read or something was that she was just really rebellious or something and they couldn't control her. So they gave her a lobotomy and it turned her into a vegetable. And then she just was institutionalized for the rest of her life. But she was like really,
sounds
really...
like Mac's character.
Essentially. Yeah. Except for that she wasn't even somebody with like a criminal record. I mean, she was a Kennedy. She was just somebody who made the family look bad or something. And cause she was like a partier or whatever.
At least just ship her off to a different country.
Right. I know. It's like,
get her out of the press.
But yeah. So that wouldn't have been that long ago. I don't know when lobotomies became, I don't even know, maybe they're still technically allowed in certain situations. I don't know. I'm gonna look it up. Talk about something else for a sec. I'm gonna look up to see if
I don't know
if lobotomies are illegal in all situations.
Well, and I think Chief is really freeing him instead of being stuck there as a vegetable, being alone in a corner, being left to just sit there for the rest of his life and then be strapped in bed and living in that terrible routine that he hates so much. So I do think that it's a justified act because he already figures, you know, McMurphy's dead. He's not the same lively, always happy, you know, smiling, trying to cause chaos to evil Nurse Ratched. You know, he's really dead.
Even though I knew, like, once he did the pillow, I knew he was going to kill him, there was part of me that was hoping that he was just trying to, I don't know, because Mac starts to really struggle and try and fight back, so I was like, maybe he's just trying to, I don't know, get Mac back somehow, even though that's not possible. I just didn't want to see him die, I guess. Yeah, but I think it is a sad
moment in the film, you know, because you realize what's been done to him, and then Chief realizes what he's done when he notices that, you know, he's got the incisions on his head.
Yeah.
And just like, oh no, like, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen.
It's the last thing Mac would have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially to know that the Ratched had the victory in the end, really. Yeah. She really did for him.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the only saving grace is that he did inspire Chief
to get out.
Yeah.
Well, and that shows you, you know, McMurphy shows the only interest in Chief. Everyone's just, you know, there saying, oh, he's a dumb deaf Indian, and obviously he's not. I don't know if we clarified that Chief pretends to be
deaf and
dumb,
And, you know, he's left isolated there too. You know, he gets his medication when he needs it. And, you know, other than that, he's just
pushes there. His whatever it is, his little broom. Yeah.
And
Max, the only person who treats him like a real person.
A real person.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, you know, that was freedom for him. And he finally gained the courage and said, you know, there's a point where he said, you know, I'm not as big as you, McMurphy, and the actor is, what, 6'6", right. And then Jack Nicholson's 5'9", 5'10".
Right.
And then when he's getting ready to leave, he says, you know, I feel like a goddamn mountain, Mac, and then he realizes, like, oh, you know, he had a lobotomy, and but he still has that courage now, and then he breaks
It's touching.
Free.
It's touching. Yeah. It's a good, it's a very good end of the film, I think. It also, I think it's really funny, you guys probably haven't seen this, but there's an episode of Always Sunny, which has Danny DeVito. He's one of the main characters. He gets sent back. And this is actually really funny for me because I hadn't seen, I didn't know anything about this One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Necks.
Necks.
They did that too. But I didn't know anything about this film. I didn't know Danny DeVito was in it. And there's an episode of Always Sunny where he gets sent back to a loony bin. And it actually ends, there's a big Indian guy there. And it actually ends funny. With a big Indian guy ripping up a water fountain and throwing it through the window.
Oh, yeah, that's a total nod to that then.
So, and now I really want to go back and watch that episode and look for the other homages to this, because I'm sure there's plenty.
We should watch it after this.
Well. We should, actually.
So, just looking it up, it says, lobotomy is rarely, if ever, performed today, and it's a much more elegant procedure. It's not going to be an ice pick. And
so they still do it to like sedate people kind of thing?
No, now they do it for, it's a much more precise is what this is saying. It's a much more precise science now.
Where but I'm asking about the purpose. Like why?
It's not to sedate people anymore. So now let's see.
I guess sedate isn't the right word. Domesticate, tame.
I mean, you could call it sedation. It's like a permanent sedation.
Then I don't think that's sedated.
How about a sedation for the rest of your life?
Yeah, here's the real question. Danny DeVito in his prime for Jack Nicholson. And who was the other guy that we were talking about?
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't think...
Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito might be last on the list, actually. He might be
just
below.
Just because he's so short?
He's just a weird shape.
Height. Yeah.
He's just a weird shape.
He's just a ball. Okay, so apparently now... Nowadays, it's only used in very specific areas of the brain, and only if every other treatment that they've tried has failed. So
that's
why
I'm asking. Like, treatment for
so
what?
It's a last resort.
For what they, different what kinds of things. I don't know. It says that they subsided significantly. Let's see, where did I find that? The practice started subsiding in the mid-1950s as scientists developed antipsychotic and antidepressant medications that were much more effective. Nowadays, mental illness is, so for any mental illness, I guess, primarily treated with drugs. In cases where drugs are not effective, people may be treated with electroconvulsive therapy or, as is a lobotomy is rarely if ever performed today, and if it is, it's a much more elegant procedure. So.
Elegant in what terms?
Elegant is
everyone wears nice dresses.
I'm just gonna stab you and then
But that's the thing is like now because we've mapped so much of the brain and we understand so much about how the brain works and what parts of your brain, you know, incur what reactions, that it's more elegant in that they can be very precise about exactly knowing like if we touch here, this is exactly what is going to affect in your brain. Whereas like
so in its
an
way,
ice pick
it's
lobotomy
modifying behavior to what they want.
That's what I'm saying. It sounds like it should still be illegal.
Well,
like especially without the consent of the person.
You're taking a free will.
I don't know if they're
so
done about consent.
Person.
This doesn't say this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think you can get consent. If a person's to the point where they're considering a lot of lobotomy in this day and age, you probably can't get consent from them. And it shouldn't be done.
I don't know. But it's, I mean, it's not used anymore, though, as a way to, like...
They're not turning them into vegetables.
No, and it's not used as a way to sedate somebody. You're not trying to, like, hurt them. It's a way to solve a problem that they have. So it's like how you would get surgery, like, if you had, if you had something wrong with your heart, like, they wouldn't be like,
well
we're not going to change that.
In McMurphy's case, they just took it all away. Like, all he could do was...
Well,
breathe.
Okay, but here's the thing. That's how most lobotomies used to be. They didn't try to do it in a specific way. Yeah. That's kind of the point of an ice pick lobotomy. Was they're like, oh, if we just stab somebody in the head a little bit.
It's different in today's terms, but you know, back then when you get a lobotomy, you're pretty much losing your entire mind.
Your personality.
You're
lose
your
personality.
Yeah.
Well,
you can't speak.
You lose a lot. You're not really human anymore.
Involuntary responses, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the point is like, it wasn't like, oh, with McMurphy, they took it all the way or something and intentionally did that. Like, they just gave him a lobotomy. And at that point in time, like, that's just what a lobotomy did. And it probably had slightly different effects depending on the person because nobody's brain is the same as anybody else's. But that's essentially what lobotomies were for a really long time, was that you knew if you gave them to somebody, they were going to turn into a vegetable. Like, they were, there was no, it was not an exact science. Now it is.
And, like,
and it's still a last resort. Making
it
an exact
science, then it still varies because everything's not exact. You just said not everybody's brain is the same. It
no, but at least, yeah, but I mean, we do brain surgery now. Like, that's you a very normal. You can get into
the Imago Dei conversation, but we'll save that for later.
Okay, that is not what we're going to talk about, though. Yeah. Exactly. So, no, okay, but the point is that now we understand how brains operate much better, and we do a lot more brain surgery, and we have a lot higher success rates because we understand it. So a lobotomy now, if that was the last resort kind of thing, would probably be far more effective, to the point where, like, maybe your personality would change a little bit, but not like you're not going to be a vegetable afterwards, unless it's a totally, you know, like a black market surgery.
I think you still have to question the ethics of it.
I don't know. I don't think it's I don't know if it's unethical or not. If it's like, if it's a, somebody that you've been treating with medication or whatever, and because this was saying patients can consider it.
Right. But so I mean, that's a way of padded rooms for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, I mean, even if that okay, sucks, but, okay. Isn't that better than?
No, I don't know. That would be my question. What if you could fix it though with surgery? Isn't that fix? More like, if somebody has to be kept in a padded room, there's clearly something wrong with them. That means they are a danger to themselves. That's not like, that is not a normal functioning brain. So wouldn't it be more humane if there's a way that you can alter something very tiny to keep them from hurting themselves so that they have a chance to live a normal life outside of an institution, or at least to be able to interact with other people? I mean, wouldn't that be more humane than being like, well, we'll just leave their brain as is and lock them up in a padded room and see ya, you're never going to have human interaction again outside of a doctor. Like, that seems pretty inhumane to me.
It's a touchy subject, I don't know.
Well, why are they forced in there? First of all, I don't think any of those men that are in the movie were really a threat to anybody else. I mean, McMurphy was the only one that would have been a threat because of his previous history with violence. And, you know, he... You know, we didn't come to the conclusion if he was insane or was lucid or not, but all the other men, they seem very harmless, but they're in there for the rest of their lives, essentially. I mean, they don't have free will, like, they're on a schedule, you know.
Yeah, but that's not the same as being in a padded room. Ratchet. There's nobody that we're shown that has, like, that level of mental instability. Maybe that exists supposedly at this Billy location. Well,
was a threat to himself. He killed himself.
Not enough of a threat, though, where they had him in a padded room. I mean, people in a padded room, like, that's, like, straight jacket material. Well, in that case,
like, the part of the brain that's responsible for emotions, why not just get a lobotomy for depression and then get that out and say, hey, nobody's going to kill themselves anymore or want to kill themselves because now they're not a threat.
And then you get into...
are lucid, and, you know, they deal with depression, but they're not mentally.
Then you get into equilibrium territory where everyone's taking pills that suppresses their emotions.
Now we're getting into, like, Aldous Huxley, A Brave New World.
Well, no, but that's what he's saying. Like, equilibrium, mm-hmm. You've seen that movie, right?
The movie?
Equilibrium?
No, I don't think I have.
That's basically the premise is that it's an utopian society. Or dystopian mm-hmm. society where everyone takes pills that suppresses emotions, so there's mm-hmm. no emotion.
Yeah.
It's basically the premise.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything about this movie that you guys don't like? If you had to take an ice pick to this, so to speak. If you had to cut out the parts you didn't like.
So it's...
Book aside, yeah. Pretend there's no book.
I was going to say, so maybe I would feel differently if I read the book. I wish... I don't know. I wanted the story... I guess it's just that I don't like the way that the story is written. In that he clearly had the chance to, like, help other people escape, and he wasn't going to do that. Like, sort of. Like, I guess he was trying to get Billy to come with him. But the fact that he didn't make a more concentrated effort to get some of those other guys out of there, like, why did he turn it into a drinking party? Was kind of, like, I mean, maybe he was just trying to show them a good time. A lot of
them weren't wanting to leave. No,
and I know that. I know
he wasn't. Even Billy said, like, I'm not ready to go.
I know. And I know he wasn't going to, like, take everybody with him, because obviously some of them genuinely have handicaps. But I felt like that was just... For as good of a guy as Mac seems to be for the most part in taking care, like, you know, watching out for these other guys, that seemed like a really, I don't know, stupid and not at all helpful thing to do. That, like, I understand getting the warden drunk or whatever so that you can have a chance to escape, but I didn't understand, I mean, sure, maybe you want to kind of go out with a bang and be like, bye, it's been great, I'm glad I made friends with you guys, But getting them all drunk and then, like...
But if everyone else had wanted to go, he would have let him. I mean, he was urging Billy to go, and Billy's like, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah, but I think part of the... I don't know. I just kind of didn't like that he... And that he, too, decided he was going to go ahead and get drunk, which is then what led to all the other issues, was that he got drunk and fell asleep and then woke up when it was too late. And instead of being able to, like, get out of there and potentially help some other people like Billy or Chief or whatever get out of there and be able to go live, like, a normal life, he was stupid. And so, I don't know, that kind of annoyed me because I felt like I didn't like the story writing on that part, but I don't know. That's like a story issue. That's not a, like, a film issue.
Yeah. I think there probably are parts of this movie that could be better, but I would have to watch it a second time to actually find those. I feel like it's missing some pieces, but there's not, I don't think, like, right here and now, I don't think there's anything I could actually pull from this movie and say, this is a bad part about this movie. This needs to be cut out. I don't think there's really anything I would do that to that I can think of.
It's crafted very well. I think it's a bittersweet concept of how they make a man like McMurphy, who has so many faults, such a lovable character, because he's not, if we were just outside the street and we heard a man that was accused of statutory rape and was brutally beating people to a pulp and choking a woman,
we'd get our phones out.
Yeah, we would be calling the cops and saying, get rid of this guy. But you find that he's actually a very relatable character, that, as the way he put it, you know, he's like, I like to fight and fuck too much. And it's just, what? Like, usually you hear a guy like that, you don't like him. But I think, as you said, you know, he's very charismatic.
Yeah, and I think that's
people to like him.
That's probably the winning personality, is just being charismatic. Like, that just cancels everything else out. Mm-hmm. You can be convicted of rape and a murderer.
But he's such a sweet guy. But he's so really cool.
He's fun to hang out with, Mom. Yeah.
I like him.
Yeah. I mean, it's statutory rape. It's not, like, violent rape. But
the degree. Just, it's saying, not, like,
rape. Well, okay, if we're going to go off of based off of the story that he told, it was consensual. It just is statutory rape.
It's not Shawshank Redemption rape.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like
going on 35, and she was looking 18.
Well, no, he says that she...
Red beaver, and you're just right there.
Yeah, but I'm saying he says that she told him she was 18, and then that it was all entirely consensual, which makes it like, yeah, he still shouldn't be sleeping with somebody who's that much younger than him, because it is illegal. But the fact, I mean, like, I would put that in a very different category from somebody who's an actual rapist. Like, there are tons of people who date people underage and have sex with them, and, like, technically, yes, it's statutory rape, but, like, it's not actually a, like,
what he's accused of, or you know, his final judgment is, he's not denying it. He's not saying, oh, I never did that, the system's wrong. He said, yeah, I kind of messed up, you know, I fight people, you know, I had sex with someone who told me they were 18, they were 15, like, you know, I did.
And that's really, in the beginning of the movie, it seems pretty normal. He seems pretty lucid. Maybe it's being in the loony bin, like you were saying earlier, that turns him crazy. That makes him crazier and crazier.
Because he definitely doesn't seem like, I mean, yeah, so sure, fighting people, like, violent assault is, yes, that is something that makes you not a great person. But
now, I don't know what places like this were like in the 70s, but maybe this is kind of a commentary on that.
This was filmed here in Oregon, actually.
The fishing
hospital that they did that?
Is that the state hospital?
That's here.
Yeah. They mentioned the state hospital. What Beaverton? They mentioned Beaverton.
Yeah,
that's what I was like. I wonder if this is in Oregon.
The book is based in Washington, but the filming actually took place here.
Yeah, and when they go to on the fishing boat, that's Depot Bay. I've been there. I've walked under that bridge.
Oh, that's right, because there's a picture, there's a poster of it in PDX. Because they have posters of, like, everything that's been filmed here. There's a poster of it.
Well, Shining has been...
Yeah, the part of The Shining was also
Timberland Lodge.
But yeah, that would be the state hospital, probably, is part of what they used.
But I was saying, I don't know what the situation of these places was like in the 70s, but I wonder if this movie was kind of a commentary on that, like,
probably
how bad of places
I mean,
they
in
are.
General, well, mental hospitals get a pretty bad rap.
Yeah, it's based in
the
60s. The
film is based in
63
because the World Series that they're mentioning had the date. It's like, oh, here, beautiful, 1963, on a sunny day. And
Yeah.
The film's it's filmed in 1975. That's when it was released. True. So. Yeah,
but no, I'm sure that it is very much a commentary because mental institutions do not have the greatest reputation. I mean, they generally are known for not treating people like humans. And I know that the Oregon, if you read up on the Oregon State Hospital, they're there's all kinds harsh. Of awful stories about it. I mean, just, and even, like, the mental hospitals are just weird. Like, when they were...
how much of that is just what we glean off of from what...
No, what I was going to say, the way that they handle things, I wasn't even going to talk about, like, actual people in them or, like, you know, oh, this is because people made a horror movie about it. So the Oregon State Hospital, recently... Rachel was reading me an article about this, like earlier this year. They were doing something, cleaning out like the basement or whatever. They found a room that had over 300.
Do I want to hear this?
Yeah.
300 bodies.
It had 300 unmarked urns that were full of ashes in it, but like not marked with anybody's names on them. Like they were just in there. And I'm like, how horrible is that?
Yeah,
like that you just have the, you're storing, like you're not even marking them. People who's like, this was a family member, they have no way of knowing, you know, like they can never pay respects to that person or actually like give them a formal like burial of any kind. Like you're storing them in a room.
I know, like, this is like a really sad and touching thing we're talking about, but from now on, like, whenever anybody says anything about cremations, all I can think of is The Big Lebowski, where they're cremating the guy, and it's just going in the guy's mouth in the wind. It's just hitting him in the face. It's just one of the best moments in cinema. They're dumping their friend
out. Really, that's the best moment? One of the best moments in cinema? Really?
Like,
in cinema?
Like, top 100, I think.
Top 100. Okay. Yeah, well, I'd love to see your other 99 at some point.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some...
It's by far the best. Next one, Weekend at Bernie's.
I love that movie.
Yeah, you showed me that movie.
Was there anything you didn't like? I don't know if we really got to you on that.
I really enjoyed the film. I don't think I would necessarily change anything. I might want a little more character development with Nurse Ratched. Other than that, I think it's really good. She does a magnificent job of being a unlikable character. And, you know, really playing that role, but I would like to see a little more of why she's like that, why she's so role-oriented.
I would add, too, that it would be interesting, and maybe the book covers this more, or you would get a better sense for it, to know if she's actually... Because it kind of goes back to, like, is Mac actually crazy or not? So is she actually as awful of a person as what we're shown, or is some of that his perception of her... And that it's very, like, what we're seeing is actually a very biased portrayal of this woman, and maybe she's not actually as bad. Like, you were saying you were giving her some leniency because she works in a mental hospital, and, like, you can't just be a pushover, like, sweetheart, like, you know, working with kids kind of thing. Like, you have to enforce rules, and you have to make sure that things run the way they're supposed to run because you are dealing with people who are mentally unstable. So I wonder if...
Going to the extent of the meeting with the vote, just think about how easy it could have been. Okay, you got the 10th vote. You've been harping on this. I don't care if it'll make you and everybody else in the ward happy. We'll turn on the baseball game. But she's really anal about, you know, turning on a baseball game, which, you know, half of the men in the room wanted. And there's a man who pretends to be deaf and dumb, so it really shouldn't matter. So at that point, you have 17 who are cognitively aware of what would be going on. And even if the music wasn't playing for those men that she claimed, you know, oh, there's very old men and the music's the only thing they have. Well, what about when the music isn't playing? They seem fine. They don't seem to be moving at all.
Yeah, and I'm not defending her. Obviously, I hated her. You know.
You were like,
the number of times I said heinous bitch.
No.
While
she was
like, watching
yes,
that movie.
Choke the bitch.
Yeah,
choke
I wanted her dead. I wanted him to kill her.
I didn't, because I liked his character, and I was like, the ramifications if he actually kills her are going to be so bad for him.
Except for that, I didn't think they would be, because the other guys were so busy dealing with cleaning up a dead body and the blood and everywhere. I thought he was going to kill her and then just leave. Like, kill her and then run out the window and leave, because now Billy's dead and he could just take Chief and get out of there. That's what I thought would happen. Like, I was all for that. Like, just kill her and take off.
Yeah,
like,
justified murder.
Exactly. I'm all
hurrah. Hip, hip, hurrah.
I'm insane. What are they going to do to me? Throw me back in the bin. All right.
Yeah. So I was just playing, like, I guess playing devil's advocate a little bit, that it would be interesting to know, because you don't actually know, based on the movie, whether or not Mac is actually, like, how crazy he is or if he's crazy at all. So it would be, and because they are clearly pitted against each other, it would just be interesting to see whether, like you were talking about character development, to see maybe if she's actually that bad if you weren't seeing it from the perspective where Mac is supposed to be the protagonist. So it would just be interesting. Obviously, I hated her in the movie, but it would just be interesting.
For the sake of final, argument. We do ratings as well. One out of 10.
So, not one out of 10.
I said this last time, too.
You said this before.
One through 10, or I guess zero.
Yeah,
I
so 10 being zero. It is the best movie I've ever seen, one being like it should never have been made and you would like to kill everyone involved.
And I'm assuming yours is somewhere in the 1 to 2 area, am I right?
Yeah, I hated the
film. Shining gets like a 0.5.
For those of you who don't know, I'm obsessed with The Shining.
He's wearing a Shining shirt right now.
In Japanese?
Right here. The Shining.
Wow, that's nice.
I have the freedom of speech to say anything I want. Not to be racist. Limited to everything. But Asian people are so...
Is that Japanese? It's,
oh, the bottom is Japanese. My mom found it, and she said, oh, I bought you this shirt. And I guess
the top is Korean. The top looks kind of Korean.
It's either Korean or Japanese. I don't know. There's slash marks. It looks like chicken scratches.
All right. Greta, what do you vote this?
Wow,
what do you rate this movie?
History of modern East Asia. And I'm telling
yeah,
Bruce
I didn't study the language, okay? I studied its history, okay? It had weird octopus porn. Leave me alone.
Oh,
here we go, full circle. Great.
You can cut that out.
No, you gotta leave that in. Yeah.
Limited to everything, my friend. Yeah. Even tentacle porn.
And racist comments about Japan.
Do they even have chickens?
In Japan?
Have you ever seen Mulan?
Because that's an accurate historical representation.
I don't know.
In China they do, where she's got little brother and she sticks the bone and then all the chickens are following him as he lays down the food for the chickens.
You haven't seen that.
Yo, what are you talking about?
You've never seen Mulan, not the crappy remake that they're about to release, but
yeah,
the Disney version.
Yeah, I've
animated
seen Mulan, but not
Mulan
enough times to
little
remember
brother
that.
You were just talking about
little
oh,
brother.
I thought you were talking about Brother Bear.
No. We're,
I don't remember any chickens in that movie. That would have been Dare.
Why would he be talking about
he mentioned brother
the chicken,
I was not really like
the chicken
actively
is
listening.
Indian
I just heard Brother
animal,
Bear.
That's what it is.
You think he went from are there chickens in Japan to
who was it? Who played Coda's brother?
In what?
Who was the Indian that
in
I haven't
what?
Actually seen Brother Bear too much, but I know like his spirit.
Talking about Brother Bear right
I
now?
Know his spirit animal was supposed to be an eagle, but we could change that to a chicken if you want.
I don't know anything about Brother Bear yet.
I don't, we were talking about Mulan, but then
Brother
the one
Bear
who flew over
like
the cuckoo's
grade.
Nest.
You know what didn't
shining
fly over the cuckoo's nest?
The chicken.
Okay. I give it an 8, all right?
That's solid.
Not Mulan.
Brother
not
Bear.
Brother Bear. Brother Bear is like 10 area.
And that's
10,
just
10.
Because Phil Collins' soundtrack, let's face it. If Phil Collins didn't do it, it's probably a solid 4. Think all of Tarzan right without Phil Collins' music.
That's true.
Would you enjoy that as much? Yeah.
No. He also did Lion King, right?
No, that was Elton John.
Yeah.
Different bald man. Yeah. Actually, no.
What?
That would be a weird thing. I feel like Elton John's hair is totally fake now. Have you seen what Elton John looks like now?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be fake.
We can look that up later.
Yeah. Anyway, film score.
I was going to say 8 out of 10 because it's really solid. No one's going to argue against that. It's a very solid movie. I would want to see it a second time before I was like, because it's not the greatest movie ever made, in my opinion. I think Jack Nicholson is a really, or his character, Murphy, is a really, really interesting character. And I like that they actually spend time on some of the other characters too, even in this movie. I'm sure they do a much better job in the book. I just feel like the movie as a whole could have been more interesting. I think they did a good job. I think the ending was really good. Especially for the characters.
I liked the symmetry of the ending with if you want to call it symmetry, of Chief, you know, using like how Mac had talked about how he would escape.
Oh, yeah.
At least
yeah,
tried.
Like, I liked that. That was a nice bringing things full circle.
So, I don't know. That's my unprofessional view of a classic loved film like this.
I think I would give it probably a 7. Because I would agree that it's really solid. I don't think that there's anything wrong with it that I can think of. I mean, again, I've only seen it once, so I'd have to watch it again to see if maybe there's something that I feel like there's a plot hole or that it's missing something or that something could have been done differently. Hmm. However, despite it seeming like it's a very solid movie as far as all of the technical stuff is concerned, it didn't capture my attention the way I would have wanted it to. Like, I don't have a desire to rewatch the movie. It's kind of something that I feel like I would tell people, like, you know, if they asked me, hey, is it worth watching? I would say, yes, you should watch it once, but not really something I'm going to rewatch. So I would say like a 7. Like, it's good, but not the most entertaining thing I've ever seen.
I think I would give it an 8 or a 9. I think this is the second or third time I've watched it. And personally, I feel like when you watch it again, it gets better. Some things clear up. Some of your questions, they do get answered. I like just some of the jokes and the satire that are in the film. I found it very funny because I think it was actually Mr. Harding, that was the guy's name, who gets made fun of a lot, but within the group, like,
for being
gay. Yeah, they keep making
that jokes. Makes sense because he's the one who's like, his wife is sleeping with other guys. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, well, why is your wife sleeping with other guys? Yeah. Well, it's like, maybe you can't fulfill the. You know, your marital.
Oh, yeah, he is really vague when you're talking, like, well, I can only speculate.
Yeah. But. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that the awards that the actors, you know, received are very well earned. They did great performances. I do like the plot line and the story. I think it's very unique. I haven't seen anything that compares to it. I definitely think it does a great job.
I think this film won, like, 5. Yeah. Emmys or something like that. Like, best director, best screenplay, best lead actor, best supporting actress.
The first time I heard this film, I remember I was walking through a Walmart and my dad said, oh, the one who flew over the cuckoo, or one flew over the cuckoo's nest. And I'm just thinking, what the heck is that? And he said, we need to get this film. And, like, we never ended up watching it. And I remember, you know, going by and then I see the film and I was thinking, oh, I've never actually seen this. So I bought it and was really happy. I'm just thinking, yeah.
Alrighty, it won Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Director, and then Golden Globes for Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Motion Picture Drama, Best Actor, BAFTA for a Best Actor in Supporting Role, Golden Globe for Best Director, BAFTA for Best Film.
Sounds like the best.
Golden Globe for Best Screenplay, BAFTA for Best Actress, BAFTA for Best Actor, New York Film Critics Award for Best Actor, People's Choice Award for Favorite Movie, Golden Globe for Best New Star of the Year for the guy who played Billy. Is that the highest
award ever? So, favorite movie? Kind of an award is that? By the way,
I guess our opinions don't mean crap then if they're receiving all these awards that actually mean something.
Well, I mean, these are all from the mid-70s, so you know it's been a while. Yeah, they won all kinds of stuff. I mean,
I bet it's still
like from everything you can win.
The best generation is no longer the best. You know,
but
from
everything you can win a meaningful award from in film, it got it.
Well, I'll bet it's still on AFI's top 100 movies of all time. Yeah,
it even said when looking it up on like IMDb, it said it had a 93% approval rating on, you know, stuff like that and Rotten Tomatoes. So it's still, you know, upholding the reputation that it had when it was released in 75.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Anything else we need to talk about that's not film related? Did you have any?
Danny DeVito, you never answered that question. Would you take him in his prime?
Oh, I didn't remember hearing that.
I feel like before those questions can be answered, we have to establish when the prime was of all these guys.
But then the other question is, like Steve Buscemi, did Danny DeVito have a prime?
See, that's what I was thinking, is like, Danny DeVito is not attractive in this movie at all.
No.
And
have you ever him in season 10 of Friends, though, where he's...
Is that where he's the stripper?
He's the stripper. He's like, I walked all those stairs.
That's one of the only episodes of that show I've seen.
And only because Danny DeVito was in it.
That's because Danny DeVito's in it.
Yeah, it's true. I actually, you know, I really hated Danny DeVito. I thought he was really annoying. Until I started watching Always Sunny. Yeah, and he's so lovable. He's great
in that show.
He's so likable.
I.
It makes you appreciate him in other things. It really does. Like, after that, I went and watched.
As an actor, you mean? Or
I think when you start with something.
One of his first roles was in Taxi.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
That's where he got a lot of fame. Speaking of statutory rape.
I don't think
we're on that.
But, like, when you watch him in something that he's so funny in and so good in, like Always Sunny, then you like him as an actor, and so you can go back and watch other movies that you may not have liked him in. and you'd like him more in those
movies. I guess that's true.
Like Get Shorty or something like that, where you wouldn't even, may not even really notice him. And then you like him from something else, so you go back that's and you true. Appreciate him more.
I think that's the case for like any actress or actor. You know, you see them in one film that you like, and, you know, you watch them in other films and think, okay, maybe I was a little too harsh on them, and, you know, you just really take in who they are as an actor and can appreciate more that they've done.
Yeah.
Also, and then sometimes you can just appreciate the growth of somebody as an actor and
except
actress.
Except for Danny DeVito, there's no growth there.
Okay, not physical growth. I meant growth in talent.
He acts pretty mental, like pretty mentally ill and Always Sunny too. So he hasn't grown much from Cuckoo's Nest. To
mental
this.
Stability is still the same as Cuckoo's Nest. He didn't fly too far.
Still roosted.
Yeah.
You want to know
my first ideal date was going to be me taking you to some cheap place and say, baby, you could have anything you want on the dollar menu.
Nothing
and now there's not a dollar menu,
and
it ruined it. Inflation.
I'm so sorry that your dreams have been crushed.
Inflation ruined my
first
date.
Exactly.
Hot take.
Yeah.
Hot tip. Hot tip.
Yeah, there is no hot take anymore.
You know, other than the Iowa Democratic caucus.
Yeah, it's going to be a hard year for them. They can't even count, let alone they want us
apparently
to take care.
Apparently they've released partial results.
Yeah.
Partial results.
Yeah. Partial. We think they have like 30% of the vote. We don't know.
I've seen a lot of people making jokes though about, they're like, it's because they knew that Yang was going to get all of the support and they couldn't handle that. And so they're afraid of Yang.
No,
and
I think
he's
actually,
is he getting pretty big?
Got a
he's,
lot of support.
I feel like he's
he
gaining
had,
a lot of traction.
No, he had, so from the results that they released, Yang had 32% of what was released and Bernie Sanders only had 25%.
It seems like he definitely, even though Bernie Sanders offers a lot of,
well,
know,
when
free
Bernie
stuff,
Sanders takes those free votes from Yang and, you know, they apply socialistic views, then it's about, you know, 50-50. So.
Oh, I feel like,
sorry.
I realized you were making a joke.
Yeah.
I feel
sorry
like,
to you,
I feel like
Bernie
Yang,
Sanders.
Yang kind of, supporters. I don't know, is more appeals more to our generation, I
oh,
guess.
Yeah.
The kind
yeah,
of person he is. He's definitely younger, a lot younger. I don't know how old he is, but he's not that old.
He's younger.
Well, I heard that, Mike.
Yeah, he definitely. Do you mute mine?
What?
Oh,
no.
I wondered. He did mute yours then.
I think he muted mine.
Okay. Well, I know that a lot of my friends and people that I follow on like Twitter and Instagram and stuff that are my peers are big supporters of Yang. Like even people that aren't super political, or maybe, you know, some people that I think may, if they were old enough, may have even like voted for Trump over Hillary last time, are like big Yang supporters. So I don't know a ton about him. I need to get more informed on these candidates. I was thinking about the reason I was like, oh, it's an election year, I should probably start thinking
I
about.
I think I've just gotten to the point where I don't care, and
well,
that's
the
probably
problem.
A bad thing, because I was heavily like 2016, I was gung-ho, very invested in politics, and now I'm at the point where I do not give a rat's behind, because there's not really any likable Democratic candidates that I would even bat an eyelash at, and Trump is, you know, he's just Donald Trump.
But there's no other Republican nominees
and
that are going
to
really
contend
with
him. I am very frustrated about. They don't even give the choice of having some, you know, there isn't anyone that's willing to stand up within their own party with Republicans, because I would have considered myself conservative Republican and said, yeah, vote for party. But I'm at the point where I just want someone that's ready to stand for American ideals and the American people, regardless of party. And I think within recent years, the Libertarian Party has been gaining a lot more popularity. Obviously, they're still very small in regards, but I'm just so tired of the bickering of, oh, he's a Republican, oh, he's a Democrat. It's just, I've come to the point where, what do you want to do for the American people? How are you going to do that? And are these just promises that you're just giving us a bunch of bullcrap so we'd vote you in and you sit there for another 4 years and don't do crap? Or are you actually going to do something before it's too late to fix anything? So,
yeah.
Wow.
Maybe I should run.
Get some.
But I have to be 35, so I will see you in...
Also,
you
know, I really don't want to date a politician.
No, you won't be dating a politician. You'll just be dating somebody who's in politics.
Yeah, you'll just be calling me Mr. President.
KJFK.
Darn right.
I think you're that just live went to your head.
That did not go to my head. I would never get into politics. Went to your head just like you that bullet know, did. No, you want
to
know why?
See,
I created,
that was
get
a
into...
funny joke until you had to like validate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't making a joke. I didn't mean
it.
It as
was
a joke.
Joke the first time you said it.
I didn't mean it as a joke. I was...
You said it went straight to your head. Yeah. You should have just left it.
Left it there.
No. I was laughing on the inside. I didn't give you
just,
the like.
And then you went to
out loud.
Just like the bullet.
Like the bullet.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I wasn't. I wasn't thinking of it that way.
Do not explain your
meant...
jokes. They're not
funny. It wasn't supposed to be a joke at first. I realized after I got done saying it, I was like, "Oh, that could be a joke," and then I said that.
Oh, that could be a self thought. That could be a joke. I'll explain it to them and ruin it.
Puns like you do.
Well, get on my level, and it's Mr. President to you, okay? Mr. Future President, you can call me.
I'm so angry because I'm trying to mute you, but we're so close to each other that it doesn't work. You're just picking up on our mics.
Sorry.
Screw that.
Yeah, I'd have to run in what, 2036? That'd be an election year, I think. Is then it? I'd be eligible to run for president.
Yeah, I don't think it is an election year because 2020 is.
2020. Well, I'm talking
future. Oh,
wait,
future. Yeah, so it might
future.
Be.
Yeah, so it'd be 24.
See. It might be.
32, 36.
36.
Yeah.
So you will be seeing me vote for Thomas.
Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, Thomas. I'll just, you know.
Legalize tentacle porn.
Yeah. That will be the first day. That's number one.
At least you're being honest.
Yes, exactly. Only the important issues. I'm running on for the American people, okay? We want tentacles. We want tentacles. Uncensored Squidward tentacles.
Will you please mute him?
I can't. I just got done saying I can't.
This is too funny.
All right, so I'll start with Karina so I don't like throw you under the bus, although I really feel like you deserve it after all this.
And after
and whatever
going
you're doing,
on
too, sure. Karina, what would you recommend?
What?
For just what? In general. Like, what's something you recommend? Like, something you've encountered in the past week that you're like, I would recommend that.
Like, it could
tentacle
be
porn.
Anything.
Yeah, yeah. It could be, I mean, it could be a movie. It could be like a, you know, a bagel you had that
oh,
you're like,
okay,
this is a damn
okay,
good
okay.
bagel.
Well, to anybody who lives in the Salem area, I would recommend Big Wig
wow.
Donuts.
Location-based. Here we go. Great.
Oh, okay. Well, Rooster Teeth recommends stuff that's Austin-based all
not
the time.
Big
no, they
donuts.
Talk about
they
stuff
closed.
That's Austin-based.
They said they closed at 2, and then we're closed at 1. They're liars.
Their donuts are really good.
Yeah,
I recommend Big Wig Donuts. They're amazing. They just make donut holes. They're vegan. They're super good, though.
Gross.
You can't tell
vegan.
When you eat them.
Mute.
Yeah.
All right.
Vegan.
What's something you recommend, Bradley?
Well, let's. I'll try an approach that Steven Crowder tries. You know, just some words of advice. You know.
You're gonna recommend advice.
Yes. Some advice. I'm sorry. terrible advice. Terrible advice. You know, just some tips on what to try and do in your daily life. You know. Just look for one thing that you're grateful for when you wake up. Life's not too bad, you know. I think we focus on the negatives too much. And
okay. All right, something I would recommend is the board game Scythe. It's a really fun game. It's very complicated. Lots of moving pieces, but it's a lot of fun. End of podcast.
Sexual magnetism.